to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow, and with me as always is Thaxos.
Hello, hello.
We have Pinocchio.
Hello.
Frost.
Hey, everybody.
And a special guest from Shonari Vakadla Clan, Hunter.
Hello.
Sweet. All right, podcast. All right, so we'll start in with you, Hunter. What is your position in the Mercs?
I am the Elred, or clan leader, for Shonari Vakadla in Arizona. One of the bigger clans, or at least place to think we are.
Yeah, it's like it's sort of a constant thing between you and the BVC, right? It's like you two are pretty much always number like one and two, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, we were always chasing. Well, recently we've been chasing them. They had a big spike over right before I took over as clan leader and kind of shot past us. So we've been trying to catch back up. We actually have quite a few recruits. We just got a big rush of ours as well, and I've got a whole bunch more after our Phoenix Comic Con.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And how long have you actually been Alarad now?
Actually, July should mark my year anniversary.
And in a year of doing the job, you managed to get Ori Ramcad. Congratulations.
Yep. Very good, sir.
Then I'll...
Congratulations, sir.
Yes. Legit actual congratulations. We're not just being jerks.
Yeah. Like, believe it or not, we actually value the club.
Yes.
Those of us.
As do I.
For like 100 years. Now, I am very uninformed as to what goes on down in yonder deserty Southerlands, being an East Coast person myself. I'm aware that you guys do actually have, obviously, Phoenix Comic Con, which is massive every year.
It's getting better.
As far as I'm aware, it's actually one of our highest attendance cons as well. We usually have, we have more at Dragon always, and we have a substantial number at New York, or at least we used to. And obviously, anytime there's a celebration, but I think Phoenix is probably number three or four. In terms of the size of our cons. What do you have for other events down there, though? I never really hear about any of the rest of them.
We have three Comic-Cons in the state, Phoenix being obviously the largest, which we hit 77,000, I think. I saw the official total this year for attendees. But we also have a January Comic-Con that's just started. I think we've been there twice now, called Amazing Arizona Comic-Con. And it's kind of getting up and running. They're trying to get it as big as Phoenix. So it's a little bit different. And then down in Tucson, in the southern part of our state, they actually hold a Comic-Con every year as well. I'd have to look, figure out what month it runs. But it's a small one. They have kind of a small convention center down there, but they usually have a pretty good showing. I don't know official numbers or anything to quote it, but so we do have those. And then... year-round, we do all kinds of charity work. We go to different events, just like most of the other clans, I'm sure. We're doing the baseball game. We've done indoor football league game this year. We did a Phoenix Suns game this year, so some of the sports teams are starting to invite us out now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's, you know, basically we just do a lot of events all year round. I think we hit 37 last year total. And the year before, we were at, like, 48.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, that's yeah, Florida tier really attendance.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, Wampa, like, we usually do, like, total, maybe 10 on a great year.
We do about 25 in Talon, but, I mean, and yeah. That'd be on a pretty busy year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, damn, like... 30-something, 40-something?
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of upper crusty there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's cray.
That's a good thing. You
know, besides the heat, you know, we can pretty much go year-round. The weather here is pretty good, so we don't have to worry about snow days or anything.
Yeah,
that's true.
Rub it in.
Yeah.
And we can golf year-round, you know. So.
Well, you can golf year round up in Maine, but it's finding the ball does become a difficulty.
So Hunter, I know that in general Arizona has sort of been renowned for having a whole lot of people who are actually very good at basically one thing, which is kind of how it works in the Mercs. You've got the metal guy, the leather guy, guy who does the ABS. What do you do?
Myself? I actually have two kits. One's Sentra and the other one's metal that I just finished. That isn't official yet. So I'm not very good at anything, really.
Obviously.
You know what? That is a legitimate specialty. It is a legitimate specialty to be good at nothing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're an M5 shade provider.
That's yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That was my brainchild, so I kind of take ownership there.
You're a community organizer.
Well, there you go. Well, I mean, actually, yeah, that's exactly what you are. You may not be any good at building
exactly
Verpin, Verpin rifles out of cardstock and painter's tape, but you can make people go to events. So hey.
It's true, yeah. I do like setting those up and getting as many people there as we can.
Hey, somebody's got to do the admin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the M5 thing was funny, though, because our clan leader, the former clan leader, Victoria, she's under 5.5, and then we had, I think it was 3 or 4 Fem Mandos join up that were all under 5.5 right at the same time, and I think 2 of them got official on the same day, and it was kind of like I had all these mini Mandos running around, so
mini
I had to do something for them.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know that feel.
So yeah. what does M5 stand for again?
That's the Mandalorian Mercs Mighty Mini Mandos.
That's what it was.
I wanted to do something cool, James Bondy, you know, MI6 or something or whatever, and so I came up with M5 because I could put 5 M's together.
There you go.
And making the height requirement 5.5 fit in with the whole theme. So
I gotta wonder with the M5 thing. Like, is 5.5 the maximum height in armor or just normal?
I was about to say, because if 5.5 is the height limit, I think you can get any in.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I'm like 5'4" barefoot. So, like, you know, with the boots and the helmet on, I think I make 5.5.
Well, you win.
You're definitely in.
Are you really?
You're just in. You don't even have to apply. You're just in.
Yeah, no, seriously, that's, yeah, I'm like 5'4". Yeah.
I'm trying to think back to Celebration 6, and I don't remember you being that short.
No, I'm
short.
I am a very short man. Like, that's one reason why people always confuse me with Lemzig D from the BBC. One of them's almost identical paint scheme. And the other is, yeah, you stand us next to each other, you wouldn't know.
There you go.
I mean, I still don't know sometimes. I look at you and I'm just like, who is that? Is that a representative of the Lollipop Guild?
Oh, that's just mean.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
That's just mean, man.
So Matt, a little bit more about how you got involved in the Mercs.
Well, it's kind of a longish story, but I went to Phoenix Comic Con in 2012, and I had kind of kicked the idea around about doing some kind of a costume. I didn't know much about the Mercs at the time. I knew who the 501st were. And, anyway, I went with my cousin, and he actually looked at me as we were walking around con and said, "Hey, I might think about doing a TK or Stormtrooper at some point." And it was kind of out of left field. I had never heard him talk about doing something like that, and it kind of intrigued me. So we went back to the booth, and he talked to the 501st guys. We kind of walked away, and he was kind of mulling it over, and a friend of ours happened to be there, and she mentioned she wanted to do a pilot. So we went back to the Star Wars area, and she talked to the Rebel people about doing a pilot, and we walked away, and they were both talking about it, and I said, well, if we're doing one Rebel and one 501st, I said, somebody's got to go back and talk to the Mandos. So I went back to the booth, and that's where I met Victoria, and she kind of told me about, she went into, you know, everything, the armor and the, you know, as we would normally spiel to somebody new. But when she got onto the charity work, that really hit me as something I really, really wanted to do. I had been toying with the idea of doing some charity work, just regular old charity work. And then when I realized I could make a cool costume and do it that way, it seemed like the perfect thing. So, and out of the three of us,
I'm able. A terrible mistake.
Well, yeah, I very am. After after learning more about it all, but yeah, out of the three of us, I'm the only one who got it done, so I'm pretty proud of that.
Good. And you've been in for how long?
I got official in October of 2012.
Very good, sir.
Are you a Jetpack hater, or do you just not want one personally because they're a pain to haul around?
Yes.
Solid.
I think if I had one that worked, I'd probably be okay with it, but yeah, I don't want to carry one around when I'm trooping.
Yeah.
Yeah, none
of you have a back plate.
Both my kids, yes.
Good.
Good man.
That's a mistake. Ignore everything the app team guy says. That's a mistake. Never have a back plate.
No. Back plates rule.
On my first kid, I actually got dinged on my app because of the back plate, so it was kind of a pain, but
you said you've got two kids currently. How many revisions have your kids gone through so far?
Actually, none. My goal was to get the second kid official, and then I'm going to tear the first one apart and kind of do all my upgrades and redos that I wanted to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I actually rushed my first kit to get official just so that I could troop. My whole goal when I joined was to just do the events because that was what drew me in.
Right, and you got sucked in.
Yeah, and so my second kit, I tried to spread the money around to members of the club, and so I bought all the different parts from everybody on the forums, and then I had one of my guys here in Arizona actually do all the fabrication and painting for me. So right. It's very nice, or as close to being as finished as I wanted it to be. And so once that one's official, then I'm gonna tear my other one apart and kind of redo all the stuff that I've now seen that isn't right, that I want to do right, or at least in my mind.
It's that never-ending process.
At least make it more right.
Yeah, well, you know, the day I got official, I think I sat down and made my upgrade list, and it's twice as long as my list to become official, so
mm-hmm. Yep. That's sure, how it works.
Yep. That's the way it should be.
You're never done. It's a work in progress.
And that's what we tell
our if you are ever done, if you are ever done, you're only done until you realize that you were blind and you missed a giant gaping hole in the seat of your pants or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Until the next time you wear it.
And suddenly the gloves just fall off, as do the sleeves.
Yep. Something.
All right, so moving on to Star Wars news, probably the biggest, earliest one I'm sure everybody's heard of at this point. Harrison Ford has an absolutely crushed foot, or ankle, specifically. So naturally that makes it hard for him to act in any scene where you have to see his entire body or have him in any kind of standing position.
Yep.
Now, obviously, everybody's worried that that's going to move the release date back. No one's really come out and said whether it will or won't yet. Disney hasn't been super forthcoming with that, so it may not. J.J. Abrams, creative guy, may just be shooting around it.
Well, the most spurious of rumors, but also oddly the most specific spurious rumor that I've heard is that he actually has, it's three hairline fractures. It's not like pulped.
Yeah.
So as a result, it'll take him a while to get better, like mm-hmm. 2 months, but it's not going to be like a 3-year injury where he spends the rest of his life hobbling around.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll be able to just move most of his shoots to the end of the film shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or film his scenes in pickups or whatever. Suffice to say,
there are ways of working around it, definitely. Yeah.
But it was a very tragic thing to happen, because
so early in the shooting too.
Well, yeah. It makes all of us wait, A, and B, it's sad because Harrison Ford's an old dude, and traumatic injuries like that are very hard for older gentlemen to recover from.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
this is true.
Yeah.
He should
so.
Film a scene where he gets shot in the foot and then he wears like a space boot.
There we go.
maybe it's just right in the plot.
That or they just give him like a cybernetic leg or some shit. His foot gets curb stomped by a friggin' poor mom.
And yeah, we're.
IG-88.
We've heard that it was from a hydraulic door, which it's the Millennium Falcon ramp. Let's be honest.
There at least buggy. That,
most
to be
likely.
Fair, okay.
It has to be.
A vindictive part of me Kind of wants the Millennium Falcon to get back at Harrison Ford for having talked so much smack about Han Solo being a cardboard cutout for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And have dropped the door on him. However, that being said, again, you can't wish harm on the dude. I mean,
no.
Yeah, sure, he's made poor fashion choices. But he's Han Solo slash Indiana Jones slash Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
Let's be real here. Like, yeah. You can't hate him.
No.
Nope.
Definitely can't.
No,
plus, I mean, if he survived the dude trying to tear his heart out, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
He'll get there.
He survived Molaram.
He's been shot a couple times, so I mean...
Yeah.
He'll be good.
It'll buff out.
Yeah, I mean, Shia LaBeouf as a kid? I mean, come on. He you can survive that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you got over that, man, you're fine.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be all right.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he have, like, a dead girlfriend or something, too?
Probably.
Yeah.
No, like, he was getting haunted by, like, the ghost of his dead girlfriend or something? I thought that was a thing.
What, 6 days, seven nights?
Maybe. I don't know. It was some random Harrison Ford film from, like, 2002.
No, I got no idea.
No idea.
In other news, news that touches me deep down inside, Billy Dee Williams is fully confirmed to be doing a voice in Star Wars Rebels.
Awesome.
Very
a voice.
Awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen,
voice.
Billy Dee Williams has never performed as any major characters in the Star Wars franchise. So, especially none of whom would have been active during the dark times in the Empire.
None.
So, no, there's not a single character he has ever portrayed. As a result, it's very unlikely we will see him reprise any roles he has not had.
Yep. But yeah.
I really hope they keep the cape.
I really hope they keep the cape. Because, honestly.
And the mustache.
And
he's got to have that 80s stash.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Dee.
He's like Space Magnum.
Like when I heard that made me so happy that I put it up on the Mercs Twitter right away. And it was during one of the Star Wars weekends, and Billy Dee Williams actually retweeted a tweet from the Mercs.
You died inside a little, didn't you?
I can die now.
Yeah, you're fulfilled.
Die happy.
Die happy.
Additionally, I'm actually real glad that Billy Dee is going to be back in it, because I haven't seen Billy Dee do any, like, real work since Command & Conquer 4, which is a travesty.
Yeah. Like, I think, I'm just happy to see him come back, and I mean, honestly, he's, even if he isn't Lando, which we'll admit is almost impossible.
If he's not Lando, he'll be Lando's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lando's uncle or something.
Yeah.
Either way,
who is an almost identical character.
His name will be like Nando.
The fanboy inside of me is very pleased right now.
Oh, yeah. Again, because, I mean, of all of the, he's one of the definite class of Star Wars actors who is all about his fans, about the people who have, you know, basically allowed him to make his living off this one character he played in two movies. Mm-hmm. Like, and he is definitely one of the most appreciative guys in Hollywood, so anytime he gets to come back is a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Should be good.
Yeah, like,
speaking of actors coming back.
Yes.
This rumor has it.
Yeah.
Temuera Morrison in episode 7, potentially.
Yes.
Which, I don't even know how that would work, but...
Well, obviously, one possibility is that he's Boba Fett.
Well, another possibility is that they just did a jump to the left.
No.
And a step to the right?
No.
And then they put their hands on their hips?
No.
And you put your left foot in?
That's
a slightly different song.
That really drives him insane.
Oh, I was about to say, you do that in the middle of the time warp and suddenly you're doing fusion ha, and you've now merged with the 14-year-old high schooler next to you who happened to be at Rocky, and suddenly you have an irresistible urge to listen to My Chemical Romance.
Wow, we have gone off the rails, and that's awesome.
but yeah, I mean, it's still a pretty heavy rumor. No one from Disney or Lucasfilm has come out and, you know, said, yeah, he'll be out, and he's also been pretty quiet on the matter. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind.
It's all just speculation at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, fortunately, like half the stuff that has been rumored has come out to be true. Like the Millennium Falcon, technically, that's still a rumor. Quote unquote.
Technically, except for that picture of JJ where he's got the little card where he's like, "People, stop leaking pictures of this and starting rumors about the Millennium Falcon."
The holo chest table,
the Dejarik table.
Yeah,
yeah, which, and it's on a note card on the Dejarik table, and you can see the
buttons
the
and
seats.
Everything, and
yeah, and you can see and the seats.
And there's the fact that we know it's called a Dejarik table.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I mean, props to JJ. That's one of the best reaction images. Mm-hmm. I've seen all year.
Yeah,
really impressed by the Tatooine stuff they've got set up. Tatooine still looks kind of like a blasted hellhole, and it's even got one of those 1950s over the highway rest stops.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and that's
where there is no highway.
Set is straight out of some of Ralph McQuarrie's designs from the 70s.
Yeah,
and
it's absolutely fantastic. I'm really glad that they have decided they want to go ahead and stay true to that aesthetic, because let's be honest here, JJ is not so great for staying true to the aesthetic of classic sci-fi genres.
No, he is not. But what he does with things is really great.
Yeah. Well, now what I meant was that what we have seen so far is true
that
to
other
the
franchise,
1970s switches and light boards and all the crazy stuff that we've seen out of original Star Wars. Blasted up turbines out of old jetliners.
Yeah,
you know, that's jazz,
and that
hopefully he's gonna do a real good job of sticking with the dirty universe.
I think
also, by the way, guys, that leaked picture that's got Boba Fett's helmet in Tatooine, that's fake.
Well, even if it is fake, it could fit, because that's exactly the set design that happened in the original movies. Like IG-88's head came from a cantina. You know,
I really hope it's back. I hope they put it somewhere.
Oh, they will. We're gonna spend like the entirety of the month after the Blu-ray for Episode 7 comes out just glued, pressing, like going frame by frame to see what got hidden where.
Who will be the new Wilbur of it?
Right.
Oh, I'm going into this movie with cautious optimism because I remember the Phantom Menace.
I'm going to go in as a starry-eyed fanboy. Let's be honest here, just like everybody else is. We're all going to walk in there. We're going to see the stupid little Disney theme, and then they're going to just start the Star Wars theme, and all of us are going to quietly squee in our seats.
Quietly.
And stare up at the screen and bounce up and down.
Quietly.
Until the first disappointment hits.
There will be no quietly, because I remember when I saw Phantom Menace, you know, when I don't even remember how old I was. The entire audience, like, the Lucasfilm logo comes over after the Fox logo, and then, yay, everything's good, and then, and the crawl starts
everybody
going up.
Everybody loses their minds.
Standing ovation, like, in like, Socko freaking Maine. Like anyone from Lucasfilm is there to appreciate it.
Now, the thing is, Disney has actually adjusted their logo for some of their other films recently. Like, for example, if you watch the Tron film, they do the Disney logo in Tron-esque art.
Mm.
And they played the Disney theme, but it was done by Daft Punk.
Right.
And was in the sort of synthesized theme that they did for the rest of the movie.
So, John Williams may redo it.
Sadly, it would be weird hearing it without the Fox stuff, though.
Yeah, well, and we're not gonna have that unless Disney pulls something crazy and spends like $1 billion to license it.
Which they won't. But I mean, maybe for the Disney logo, instead of Tinkerbell cruising around, maybe it'll be an X-Wing or something.
Yeah, but I'm just really hoping that whatever they do, that they recompose the theme in G major, just so that way we can get at least the semblance of that transition. Because losing out on that is going to be a crushing defeat for my optimism when I walk in there as a starry-eyed fanboy squeeing quietly or loudly.
I bet they will.
That's the stupid little Disney do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do thing, because that's not Star Wars at all.
I bet they'll redo it or just skip it entirely, because certain Disney movies, they don't even play the theme.
That's true.
They just go straight into whatever the score for the film is.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I think that's what they did in Tron, is they had just started the theme song for the film, and they just showed the castles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to be too upset if they don't have it, because it's still going to be Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the least of my concerns.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're looking at this saying, oh god, the worst thing to happen would be if they don't transition from the distributor then we're
the
doing
reason,
okay.
The reason I harp on that is because that is one of the only things that we know is going to be a real issue. Whereas
we're making it
a real issue.
Yeah.
Well, no, as of now, as like it's something that is actually going to come up. Whereas this could be the best movie ever made.
Yep.
And it very well may be, because it's Star Wars. Yeah. Or
it could be Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes, it could be Star Trek Into Darkness. At which point...
I hope it's not.
Star Wars Into Darkness.
I desperately hope it's
Star
not.
Star Wars Into Darkness.
Star Wars Into Darkness.
Benedict Cumberbatch
could be.
Cast as Darth Vader.
Well, that's its own whole thing.
No, I gotta ask, have you guys seen the video that's floating around where... someone went up to George Lucas on the streets and asked him, what do you think about all these leaked Star Wars photos? And he said, it's not my problem. I'm retired. Like, that's awesome.
That's the best answer you can get.
You know what? Yep. I feel like GL has earned that, because he has had to deal with our griping and ridiculous shenanigans for as long as he did. And you know what? I feel like he, even though he was sort of famous for saying, screw the fans, I'm going to do what I want, I feel like he and Lucasfilm actually have done a fantastic job of putting up with our whiny bullcrap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's probably still going to get some, even though he's retired, too. So.
Well, yeah. I bet you that he gets a whole lot of hate mail and fan mail.
Oh, like, sure.
Like, absolutely.
Probably. And he probably spends his days with playing with his adopted kids and laughing hysterically at people's irate fan mail.
Yeah. And there may come that day where... you know, in a year or two, we're all looking back and going, man, I wish George had made this instead. It would have been better. I mean, we'll be bitching about the new guy.
It's true. At which point, George will be sitting high atop his
it's like, see what could have been? Okay.
See? Well, I think that's just an inherent issue that can arise from Star Wars and its legacy, is that no matter who does what, someone's not going to be happy with it, because you've got the original fans, you've got the newer fans, you've got the TV show fans, you've got people coming at it from all different elements and liking a certain style of Star Wars, and there's so many different ways to go about it. So,
well, the big thing to consider with all this is that the original Star Wars, the original trilogy, they exist in their certain time. In 1977 to 1983, there was nothing like that in the theaters. Nothing existed like that.
No. Yeah.
And now you've got, you know, this... you've got a new blockbuster, $150 million special effects extravaganza opening every week during the summer season. So it's going to be different, because it's a completely different landscape. When A New Hope came out, there was nothing like it.
Yeah.
So you're not going to capture that same lightning in a bottle, because its time has passed. I'm just hoping we have something that's just
good. Yeah.
And well, can stand the test of time.
Yeah, I want a solid hour and a half of sci-fi.
Let's not be too hasty in saying that you can't catch a bottle or can't get the whole lightning in a bottle of A New Hope when you are releasing a film for the most marketed, most branded product on Earth. It's more branded than Coca-Cola. Like, more people recognize Star Wars than recognize Coca-Cola.
That's actually part of the problem, is that it is recognizable and branded. When it first came out, nobody knew what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No branding. There was no brand recognition. There was
no one thought it would
property.
Blow up like it would.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. It had nothing to live up to.
Well, yes. What I meant was more that I don't think that it's likely at all that we're going to get a thing where they start doing a trilogy of films and then suddenly they can't meet financial success. This movie could
be
as poor. This movie could
be
as poor as Star Trek Into Darkness. It'll still make a 95 aggregate on Rotten Tomatoes, and it will still make $2 billion.
Oh, yeah.
I just hope in 10 years it's still worth watching.
Yep.
I mean, that's true. I have not watched any of the...
I don't know. I mean, aren't the prequels still worth watching? I'm probably going to apply for that, but...
No, they are. I have them all on Blu-ray, and I actually do. There are good things about them. Yeah. Yes, they are.
There are good things about those films, but I will freely admit that I have not watched Episode 1 since 2006, I think. So,
pretty sure I watched it a couple weekends ago on Spike.
I'm so sorry. Did you watch it all the way through, or did you...
The whole thing, yeah.
Wow.
I've made amends with Phantom Menace.
It has nothing to do with patience.
I still watch it.
It's a Star Wars movie. So, for me, and I mean, yeah, okay, I grew up where I was growing up with the prequels coming out in theaters, so it's a little different from my perspective as opposed to some of the older generations that had the original trilogy growing up or, you know, being the first movie that they ever saw. But, I mean, I've read the books, I've looked at the movies... The TV shows have come out to me, and sure, there's issues with any of them, but it's still Star Wars, and you know, nothing's been so far detracted from that theme that it feels not Star Wars. So I enjoy all of it, you know. And it sure, Jar Jar's a little annoying. Well, 3PO was a little annoying, and sure, there's flaws with Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones. Well, Stormtrooper hits his head on the bulkhead in A New Hope, and. You know, there's flaws in every single movie. You can't go without that, so just enjoy it for what it is.
Except Empire. Empire is flawless.
Empire is my favorite film of all time, and if anybody ever badmouths Empire, we will fight. That's all there is to it.
We have one final little bit of Star Wars news. It has been reported that Star Wars Episode 8 is going to be directed by Rian Johnson, the man who directed Looper. Which, good movie. I liked it. Had, you know, decent movie. And he is also, he isn't, as of right now, he isn't directing Episode 9, but he is, writing a treatment for it. So, the big thing about that is that, you know, originally we hear J.J. Abrams is directing Star Wars, we naturally assume J.J. Abrams is doing the big three, where clearly Disney is, entertaining that not being the case.
That actually is very interesting, though. Because the film is in filming, obviously, and it's going to be in filming and then post-pro for at least another, basically, a year and a half.
Right.
If they're already planning out Episode 8, that means that they're going to try for another year and a half, two-year-long shooting schedule. And they're going to get started a year before this one finishes. So they may be trying to replicate the Marvel franchise model, where they're releasing a film every 4 months.
Right. Which they essentially will be, because we have the primary trilogy, and then we have at least two side movies.
Yeah, and so if we're getting two... That may knock it down to one a year, or it might be one every 6 months.
Right.
Which...
I'll take
makes
it.
Makes me... Yeah. Well, I will certainly accept much more Star Wars canon. It concerns me that we might end up with some rather silly stories being told, because, let's be real here, the first Thor movie was not very good.
No. Thor 2 was much better.
Thor 2 was fantastic. Or, you know, like Iron Man 2, that sort of thing. You have a very hit or miss qualitatively, for a development schedule like that, because you can't have one director, because you have to have two sets of shooting and development going on at the same time. So, or oftentimes in the case of Marvel, they have three going at any given time. So, it concerns me, because it means that we just empirically will get bad Star Wars films.
But one thing that they're definitely avoiding and seriously attempting to avoid with this is director burnout.
Yep.
So we don't have one of Return of the Jedi's problems, so we don't have Revenge of the Sith's problems. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, every movie is going to have a fresh director, a mostly fresh crew, that's ready to just jump in and make a Star Wars movie, as opposed to filling out a contract. So doing that, I mean, it also will, you know, give us one of the advantages of the, that Empire had with its own fresh director, because they can just go in with their ideas, with their plot, with the script and treatment that Lucasfilm and Disney have given them and let them go.
Yep.
And
I hope they also, and this is something that also is a problem in the Marvel films, is that the art direction is very different between the films, whereas all of the Star Wars films, now the prequels have very different art direction from the
originals,
from the OT.
But they're however, cohesive as a unit.
Yes, but they are together. They all have very similar art direction. And the thing is, again, the Marvel films do not have similar art direction. Iron Man is very different than Thor, is very different than the Captain America films.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, that concerns me because you can't have one art department shooting three movies at a time. And I'm okay with them having different art direction for like a Boba Fett film. Or for something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you can send them to weird locations. Like, send them to Felucia or something where there's giant mushrooms and it looks all Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what I'm hoping is that in Disney's mad dash to make a whole ton of money, they do not sacrifice the sequel trilogy's quality on the altar of Dosh.
I'm not entirely worried about that, just from seeing the things that have already come out, simply because they do have that Ralph McQuarrie aesthetic.
Right,
they do with them, and that is something that has taken a lot of fanboy stress. You know, that kind of stress that you think about once a week. Yeah, that kind of stress.
Personally, wouldn't worry about it too much. For one, nothing you can really do to influence it. You know, it's gonna turn out however it turns out. And the other thing is that Disney's not one to just take a franchise and, you know, stomp on it. They're gonna want to make it
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Yeah, Disney. Well, Disney has had its, you know, has made mistakes.
Disney has ups and downs.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not saying they haven't made mistakes, but they're not gonna intentionally crush a.
Oh, I didn't mean franchise. That. I just meant that in
the mad dash for money.
Yeah, well, no, in the mad dash for money. And the thing is, Disney is a for-profit company. They've expressed that to Star Wars fans many times.
Profit.
Right.
Well, no, but like there are companies that are for-profit that idealize quality, and then there's EA. Disney oscillates between those two extremes frequently.
Disney also knows, though, just how hardcore the Star Wars fans are. They're going to do their best to not just, you know, completely ruin their fan base.
I agree. I think they're going to do as best they can not to vomit drivel at us.
Right.
I'm sure they've seen fully well just how people react when the prequels come out and that sort of thing. So they're going to know that, you know, anything that they do that splits off from the stereotypical or classic Star Wars, not everyone's going to agree with, and they should be fairly careful to not change it up too much. But
until
the movie comes out, we won't know.
And they're going to want to be able to merch it, and the only way you get to merch the most merchable franchise of merch in the merchiverse is by making sure that it stays popular and not killing it.
Mm.
So I feel like Disney is going to spend a whole lot of time and effort making sure they do this right.
Yep.
Yep. And now we have a friendly monologue from our resident application team member.
Welcome. This one kind of starts with a conversation I had the other day with a prospective member. And he was talking about the work he'd done on his kit. And he said something that we've heard I don't know how many times over the years, and I can guarantee you everybody on this podcast has heard it more times than they want to count. It's that, oh, well, I'm working on it, but, you know, I'm a perfectionist, and, you know, it's taken a really long time, and, you know, it's just blah, blah, blah. And that perfectionist thing usually means I'm never going to get this done. And you know, it's attributed to Voltaire, who said, "Perfect is the enemy of good." And Voltaire is not a Harry Potter character, oddly enough. But it simply means that you're never going to get there if you're trying to make the perfect first-time kit. If you're, you know, trying to get the best of everything. If you go on our Facebook page, in fact, I saw it today, you're going to see Tom Mandalore's evolution throughout the years. He's on version 5. If you go back to version 1 back in 2007, it looks like anything else we'd get any week in applications. It's, you know, another Mandalorian. But things evolved over time. So this is just kind of a message to the new members. If you're trying to make things perfect, you know, trying to make your ultimate Mandalorian suit, it's not going to happen. Don't worry about that. Do the very best you can. Take the critiques that come in, apply them, and get your official status. Go to the conventions, make some friends, and worry about that. As for the whole perfection idea, save that for number 2, number 3, number 4, because everybody on this podcast, we're all on our, you know, what, 3rd?
7.
Daxos, what do you want? 7? Okay.
I'm officially on my 4th.
Okay, you're on your 4th. I mean, no.
Are we talking revisions or separate kits?
This is the 4th set of chest plates that I've made.
This is version 7. Mind you, I actually did a compression to redo how I did my numbering system. I was on version 7 then as well. So
yeah, I think I'm on version like 3.5 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. You end up putting decimal points on the end of them.
Yeah, because you didn't replace the whole thing this right. time. You just replaced part of it.
This is version 7 of Frost. So
I've got I think 2 main versions, and I don't even bother counting the sub versions since, you know, whatever I've upgraded that particular day is, you know, whether it's a minor tweak or a major change, it's just I'm replacing a lot of the armor, I'm just not going to count it as anything, because that's part and parcel with having a Mando.
Yep.
At some point, you're going to go, you know what? Let's change this or this.
You know what? Jetpack.
All of this.
Oh yeah,
jetpack was an awful idea. I'm taking that off.
My gauntlets are like the most fluctuating thing on the planet. Like my, I've got the infamous cell phone gauntlet on my left arm, but my right arm has been gone from, you know, a wrist blaster to a Bacta injector to a, like a 13 dart launcher, and like, you know, it's like it's a pretty major piece of my costume that changes every 3 troops. You know,
that's pretty frequent.
That's hardly perfect.
Yeah, you're not gonna achieve it.
No.
And besides, anything that's not perfect, you can turn into weathering.
Yeah, and I mean, like honestly, like if you're striving for perfection, you're not having fun.
Yeah, you're basically feeling insecure.
Yeah, on my first kit, I was worried about all the little nicks and dings that happened when we were cutting my plates out and stuff. And my Ruslar at the time, he was advising me, it's weathering. And I'd freak out every time I made a little nick and ding because I am a perfectionist, and it drove me crazy. And then at the end, once it was painted and sanded and weathered and everything, it turned out that all the little nicks and dings were amazing, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It adds character.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this is something that we've heard, you know, going back to, you know, I've been doing this for 5 years now. I've been doing the app team since 2009, and we hear it all the time, and it's just, it's an excuse for not getting things done, and the best advice I could give is just finish it to the best of your abilities, because at the end of the day, it's not about how perfect you made your Mandalorian character. This is a social thing. It's about the friends you make. It's about going to the conventions, going to the charity events. The outfit is the way to get in, and you improve that. That's the hobby, but we're a club more than anything. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about getting in, and it's about being with the people.
And I don't know about you guys, but to me, the club and my clan is like a second family.
Yeah, that's why we're here, man.
Yeah.
That's why we stay here.
Yeah.
You come for the armor, you stay for the people.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I said I rushed my first kit, you know, to become official so I could do all the events and hang out and get to know everybody. And made a second kit so I can go back and do, you know, first kit 2.0. Or I guess we'll call it Blue Kit 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah, the people in your clan and the people in the Mercs, they largely become family members.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. You get deep into it. That's just part of it.
I've attended it so far one wedding between two of our members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'll be attending another one. I don't know.
Yes, we have room. You're invited. Come on down. We have room.
You heard it here.
That's right.
Pinocchio's got room for every single podcast listener at his wedding.
All 10 of you will have
room. Yes, all 10 of you. Because it's on a beach, you can put up tents. Yeah, so don't worry about perfection. Don't worry about all those little bits and pieces. Just get it done.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think we've got a couple Facebook questions we're going to answer before we wrap things up for this episode.
Indeed. All right, so I'll start with this one. Chris asks, where on earth do you get your armor, and how do you come up with your color combinations? Well, as for where on earth do I get it, I make it. As do most of us. Now, admittedly, not everybody makes all of their armor. Like, you know, there are plenty of members in the Mercs who have, you know, decided to devote all their free time to making armor for other people. So you can certainly buy a kit from someone or, you know, get a hand-me-down kit from somebody else, modify it, tweak it, and apply with it. But
yeah, good place to look would be the trading station for those that do make either the helmets or the armor plates or other various gadgets and weaponry.
Oh yeah. But and as for the where do you come up with color combinations? That's very much up to individual preference. Like my black and silver and copper color scheme came mostly down to I'm not the best painter, and I also my primary problem is with patience. Like I have all these ideas, but I know that when it comes down to putting tape on a piece of armor and then painting it and not just screwing it up, doing a nice like black on silver with a couple like splashes of bronze and copper here and there, it looks good and it was simple for me. I don't know about the rest of you with your color schemes.
I just tried to pick something that wasn't red and black.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
pretty much.
That's fair.
Yeah.
My color scheme, the original purple was, it's actually the same color of purple, but I chose the purple simply because purple is my favorite color. And way back in the day, Mandos only came in solid colors. So the whole armor was purple.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a Jango Fett clown. And then over time, I've added more colors onto the plates and created a wildly complex pattern, essentially based upon my own artistic genius, or lack thereof.
Or madness.
Or madness. This is madness! Along with the infamous claw gauntlet.
Next time wear a respirator so you don't get paint fume madness.
Yeah, that
so
helps.
Flying
those
Bondo
darn isocyanates.
But, So, my paint scheme originated essentially in, it was very simple, it was just my favorite color, and it progressed from there, as always happens with Mando costumes.
Yep.
Once you've been doing it for a decade, it gets away from you, it becomes its own thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, my first kit was blue, second kit was brown, third kit was blue because, well, I want to get that one right this time. That's about it.
Yeah, I went blue and black on my first kit as an urban sniper, kind of a, you know, urban pattern, or urban camo colors. My second kit, though, I went with the browns and tans to be more like the desert, since that's kind of a popular theme for us in Arizona.
I wonder why.
Yeah, right? We are the Dune Sea Clan, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, and that's also, especially if you're actually planning on making your armor, especially if you're going for like one of the specialty brigades, or if you just want to look like, I know that Ark she wanted a snow Mando kit, so she went with a lot of white and light off-white and grays and stuff like that, so that she fits in a snowbank just fine.
Yeah.
So it's really, your color is really the one absolute thing you have the absolute most freedom with. I mean, we've had the infamous flaming Mandos out of Falco. We've had hot pink Mandos, you know, it's...
Yeah, it was one of ours.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, as long as you do a decent job with your paint, you can do whatever.
I just wanted to add something I tell, and I know my Ruslars tell our new people as well, is don't go buy your first kit. Make it, because that experience is all part of this. Yes. Learning how to cut them and paint them and attach them. And I, you know, I made my first kit, bought my second one, but, you know, I now have that experience that I can call on and, you know, remember what I did to make that first kit. So,
well, and it'll help you fix stuff when it breaks too, because it will break.
And it will break.
Yeah.
And it will break.
John asks if, have you ever made real Mandalorian style armor? How was it weight and movement wise? And is it combat ready? The answer is no, because Beskar does not exist. Neither do bulletproof materials that will work in any configuration that Mandalorian armor is presented in. So the answer is no. However, I do make steel armor out of 18 gauge steel, which is, I mean, that's not as thick as you would have in a real medieval environment, but it's pretty close. And in terms of weight, it's not that bad. It's under 10 pounds. In terms of movement, it depends on the shape of your plates wildly and how well they're attached and all of that jazz. There's pages and pages and pages of this on the Mando Mercs forums, discussing different levels of mobility. Is it combat ready? Never.
No.
It could stop a knife probably, but that's about it. Somebody hits you with a baseball bat, you're done. Like, or a foot to the chest.
Yeah.
The plates, the Mandalorian armor is more dangerous to you than you are to anybody you are around while you're wearing it. Any impact against it is just going to drive the little flanges on the plate straight into your U. And it is not a combat tool. You will never find information on how to build bulletproof armor on the Mandalorian Mercs. We do not support violence or paramilitary interpretations of Karen Travis's works. We are a costume club, and a costume club only. We actually have explicit...
For decorative purposes only.
Yes, we actually have explicit rules against functional... Huh?
Please don't try the knife thing.
No.
Yeah. Don't try the knife, because that'll depend wildly on who's doing it and also how good your knife
is. Just don't do it.
Just don't.
Anything.
Don't.
Anytime you feel the desire to put on Mandalorian armor and have somebody try and beat you up,
don't.
Please seek counseling.
Yeah.
This is a costume club for a fictional universe based on designs that a crazy Scotsman created in the 70s.
Yep.
So, just not, that's not a thing.
No.
Robert asks, how does the app team maintain consistency across all the applicants? Is there a checklist for common issues not specifically located in the CRLs? If an applicant needs to address issues with their kit, is there a time limit to fix them before they have to resubmit the application? All right, for the first part of this, for the consistency, a lot of the consistency simply comes from the fact that we're a small group. I've been doing the app thing for 5 years now, and everything is centralized. So we have new members come and go. The current team, some of the members have only been on there for a few months, really, but you have the legacy going back, and things have kind of carried forward and things have evolved. And by having things centralized and not going to, you know, this, you know, clan leader over here and this clan leader over there, it stays pretty consistent. And there are times where we have to discuss them for a day or two just to keep things in line. It's tough when everything's a custom job. You're taking something that's never been seen before and fitting it into the box. And, you know, people like to use that term, think outside the box. Well, that doesn't work for us. We're trying to find the ways that whatever you built fit into the box. And as for the second part of the question, for the, the checklist that doesn't cover things, it's really just one thing known as the quality clause. There are times when we have apps come in and they're legal in a sense that all the pieces are there and they mostly fit, but it's just not working. And sometimes it could be, you know, a back plate that it's there, it looks kind of okay, but it's not really fit. Or it could just be the materials that were used, they're just not up to standard, because the standard is, could this character fit in the Star Wars universe? You know, could they walk onto a movie set and look okay? And we have to apply that just general quality clause, does this look good? And sometimes that's tough, and we get into debates. It happens. And, you know, most of the time we come to an agreeance. Every now and then, though, someone will, you know, see something that others don't. That's just part of it. And as for the time limit, the applications usually stay active on our boards for about a week. And as for a time limit to resubmit, we've had apps come back in months later. And they'll have to fill out the paperwork again on the website for the application, but sometimes that happens. Sometimes we get them within 2 days, sometimes months later. So just keep at it.
Well, I believe for that element, it's a two-week period when if you haven't denied the application, you give them recommendations to make some changes so they can be approved, though? I think that's what they're talking about.
What I was just looking at, for what we have at the moment is it goes into a pending status for a week.
Oh, okay. Week, yeah.
So, if it came in on June 23rd, you know, the date that's given is 7 days later. And that has fluctuated over the years. But generally, it's going to stay on there for a week or two. You know, it depends on how often they get cleaned off. That's just part of it.
All right. Our next question comes from Manny, who asks, when will the Mercs release the next Pepakura pattern to download? And will we ever get some 3D print files to download parts for supporting members? Well, regarding the Pepakura patterns, we don't currently have anything in the plans for having another pattern yet, but that doesn't mean we won't necessarily get one soon. Typically, those have been more of a surprise, so you're just going to have to stay tuned and keep your eyes peeled. Regarding the 3D print files, we don't have too many members that have been doing 3D printing yet. If that's something you're looking into doing, perhaps you could spearhead that and actually provide us with some 3D print files for our supporting members. We're always happy to see new members add some content for the Mercs to enjoy. But as it stands, yeah, nothing on the horizon at the moment.
All right. Mikey Cook has asked, what's the best material to make armor out of? And Mikey, that is a difficult question to answer because there's about 2 billion different types of things you can make armor out of, and all of them have assorted strengths and weaknesses. The primary categories are ABS, thermoplastics, fiberglass, and metals. And ABS is super cheap in terms of cost. You can make a billion of them if you can make one. And they are extremely lightweight. They're the lightest weight of all of them. That being said, ABS has a number of its own problems in that it is not super strong. It squeaks. It's difficult to mount paint to. And if it wears, it typically is going to wear to some weird color, typically white or black. It's what they make Stormtrooper armor out of. It has its own host of stuff. It's pretty easy to repair, but it also tears pretty frequently. Then you've got thermoplastics, which is like Sintra or Warbla or any of that jazz. Thermoplastics are easily molded into whatever shape you want, so you don't really have to have a vacuform table or anything like you do for ABS. It's not nearly as involved a process to make. Most people's first armor is Sintra. It is not super expensive, and it comes in various thicknesses, and it can be layered. It glues pretty easily. It's sort of the all-of-the-round, middle-of-the-road armor. The problem is Sintra is actually going to be a little bit less durable than pretty much all of the other types of armor. It's actually a little less durable than ABS. The reason being is that if you drop Sintra on the ground, it can just sort of crack in half down the middle. And it also has the same sort of problems that ABS does, where it wears to weird colors. Then after that, you have fiberglass armor. Fiberglass armor is typically some other material than covered in fiberglass. People don't normally actually have molds that they lay fiberglass strips in. But fiberglass's advantage is that it's pretty strong and it's fairly light. Additionally, if you have resined the outer surface, it smooths to an auto body finish and it accepts paint very easily. Fiberglass's problems are that typically it's heavy. And it I would say it's actually probably heavier than metal in most cases. And it's the resin will have paint retention problems sometimes over the long term. If you leave it out in heat, the resin will crack. There's all sorts of different little issues, but fiberglass is always a strong contender, though I think that very few people use it nowadays.
It also does require a certain amount of skill to use.
Yes. Additionally, it's a little more dangerous.
Yeah, you don't want to start with that.
Yeah. Fiberglass.
Your first attempt will look bad.
Yes. It will. Additionally, fiberglass is more dangerous than any of the other ones we have previously stated. The worst thing you're going to get from a thermoplastics or ABS is some kind of burn. Now, with metals, you can become far more injured. I personally have. However, with fiberglass, you can give yourself emphysema. Yep. You're not going to. In all reality, it's not probably going to happen in the amount of time it takes you to make one Mandalorian chest plate, let alone a 500 Mandalorian chest plates.
But if you work in a canoe factory.
Yes, but if you work in a canoe factory. Fiberglass is dangerous in that it leaves glass particles in the air. So more dangerous than you getting silicosis, which is not likely to happen, is that you could actually screw up your vision. Because if you get any of that dust in your eye, it can scrape up your lens really badly, which will first of all change the shape of your lens. And second of all, it'll make you have very great difficulty seeing things for probably several days while you recover from your injury. And that's just no good. So fiberglass, I would say, is probably fairly dangerous to use, and it's probably not really a first-timer's choice. The same is true of metal. Metal wears the best by far and away of all of the different armor types. If you have metal armor, if you drop it, who the hell cares? You just battle damaged it. Yep. Somebody bumps into you, who the hell cares? Battle damage. Metal's problems are that metal actually usually has a lot of trouble bonding to fasteners. So Velcro and JB Weld and all of that jazz, if you have smooth metal plates, they're going to have a rough time bonding to it. Now, I've seen some people who have actually put bolts through it. That works very well, but obviously you can see those from the outside. So that has to be part of your aesthetic. Or rivets or what have you. So you have to be prepared to replace those on the fly. I actually take a hot glue gun and extra snaps and just an extra roll of sticky back Velcro with me just in case everywhere I go with my costume. Additionally, metal also is hard work. I would say probably of all of the different types, except maybe Warbla and Fiberglass, which both need to be shellacked and resined, that it is easily the longest time-consuming-wise. If you're trying to actually dish your armor and make sure that it has enough structural integrity to the point where it's not going to warp around a lot, or if you're going to weld it in three dimensions, all of those take time, all of those take money, all of those take expertise. And they take specialized tools. So it's not very... I would say it's not easy to get a metal suit of armor. That's not true. We have massive amounts of resources in the forums from whom you can get metal suits of armor. And at a pretty decent price usually too. But it is typically the most expensive. Sometimes it's heavier. It depends on what you got and how big it is and how big you are and how thick it is. Sometimes you can have rust problems. If you're wearing steel and you don't adequately paint the backside of your armor, you'll get rust on your clothes, which is an issue. Again, all of the different types of armor have their advantages. All of them have their pitfalls. And it really boils down to what personally works best for you.
Gustavo asks, are the black lines above Django's visor painted or engraved? They're painted.
It's an auto body kit. You can actually get them from... you can get pinstriping kits from AutoZone.
Oh, yeah.
It is actually the exact ones they used in the film.
Yeah, it's just... He has some pinstriping on his...
just vinyl.
On there. Yeah, it's just... I mean, it's paint, it's vinyl. It is not pressed into the helmet at all. If you want to do a Django costume, that's actually one of the simplest parts... other than the general paint scheme, because if we're honest, he doesn't have paint on 90% of his armor.
That said, we're a custom Mandalorian group, so if your helmet, if you're not doing Jango Fett, you wanted to engrave it in, you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, go
nuts. Have any color you want.
Go nuts.
Do what you want. Pirate is free.
Yep.
All right, Scott asks, well, he only has one question, and he asks, where can I get a decent flag vest? I know, speaking for myself, I've purchased both of mine through the same seller on the merch forums. They both are made from duck cloth with a built-in neck seal, and they're amazing. So that's one route. I know a lot of my Mandos know people who can sew very well, and they've gone and made patterns and built their own. I'm not sure if there's a pattern on the forums or not for a vest, but maybe one of you guys could answer that.
They're out there. There are a whole bunch of different patterns. A lot of those depend on your personal sewing ability and how well you can stick to a pattern. There are actually some patterns that are so simple, like mine. It's literally just a rectangle with a hole cut out the middle for your head, and then attached up the sides via whatever. Mine, I use Velcro and elastic. I've seen people use laces. I've seen people do snaps. Anything at all.
Zippers are always good, too.
Yeah, zippers are real nice for vest fasteners, also because they're almost always hidden.
Jerry asks if cod pieces have to encapsulate your Mandalorian jewels. The answer is no, Jerry, they do not. None of mine do. I know that most of the people in here do not have the little undercup. I know that our illustrious leader... does in fact have one that encapsulates his Mandalorian jewels. It also has worn a hole in his flight suit before. It's really up to your personal preference. People have come up with all sorts of different ways to allow their cod pieces to sit very snugly, or they actually can be loose so that you can run around without having to worry about any form of metallic chafing. Suffice to say, no, they don't. They do not have to. If you want them to, you can. If that's your thing, if you like that, go for it. However, it is not a requirement.
Gonna hurt. Gonna hurt.
All right, and that is all the time we have and all the substance we have for this month's edition of Kel Dobby Talk Radio. Thank you for listening, as always. Thank you. I am Crow, saying goodbye for Pinocchio, Thaxos, Frost, and special guest Hunter77 out of Shonar Vicadla clan out in Arizona, right? Yeah, Arizona.
Sure.
Yes. Sweet! Got it right first try.
We hope so.
Alright, but again, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Until next time.
Later.
Peace out.
Goodbye.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.